Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. We all face setbacks in life, events that we can't control. And when life doesn't turn out as expected, we're left with disappointment, failure, and loss. And my second guest today, Christine Hassler, calls those feelings expectation hangovers. She'll share some great strategies for freeing ourselves from the past, changing the present, and getting what we really want out of life. That's coming up around 12:30. But first, I'm very pleased to have Donald Altman with us today. His new book, just came out in paperback last week. It's called Clearing Emotional Clutter, Mindfulness Practices for Letting Go of What's Blocking Your Fulfillment and Transformation. And Donald Altman is a psychotherapist, a former Buddhist monk, and the award-winning author of several books, including 1 Minute Mindfulness, The Mindfulness Toolbox, and The Mindfulness Code. He conducts mindful living and mindful eating workshops and retreats and trains mental health therapists and business people to use mindfulness as a tool for optimizing health and fulfillment. And he's joining us today from rainy Portland. So, Donald Altman, welcome from rainy Seattle.
Well, yeah, we have that in common, don't we? Well, thank you for having me on the show, Vicki. Pleasure to be here.
We do. And what a great book. And I was telling you before we started, I don't know, there's something going on because I've come across these great books that are really helping me personally right now. And so I know they're going to be helping other people too. And this, again, is called Clearing Emotional Clutter. So, why don't we begin with that? What we all know, I think many of us have probably seen the shows on TV about hoarders, you know, and people living in that chaos. But so what do you mean by emotional clutter?
Well, in the same way that a hoarder would have so many things in their house that you really can't even see the walls or see the apartment of that house, you know, we can have so much clutter sometimes in our minds that we can't really see clearly what the joyful things that are right in front of us. And thing about emotional clutter is emotionally dysregulated, and so my book is really trying to give people tools to help them clear out some of that clutter, to start decluttering their mind, whether it's old past clutter, family clutter, or even the new clutter that builds up daily.
Mm-hmm. And it does build up, doesn't it? I went to see I was actually taking yoga, but there was an energy healer there who said to me, you live too much in your head. And I was kind of taken aback when she said that, because I'm a very outdoors person and I don't really think of myself as living in my head. But we can still live in our head, and even when we're outdoors a lot, can't we?
Yeah, and we're very mental culture. And, you know, we don't need to blame ourselves for that. We have to make a lot of decisions in the day. We can get very mentally focused on things. And and that what can happen is we can start to get more, automatically conditioned to making quick decisions about things. And by getting into the body, and so that's the benefit of getting into the body, I'm glad to hear you're doing a yoga practice, and is that the more we get embodied, the more we can tap into this present moment and listen to the warning signals that maybe our body is giving us and telling us that we're a little out of balance and we need to do something about that.
Right. Let's take a look at some examples of emotional clutter, because it could be, you know, a project that's burying us at work, and that, using that term burying is not optimal. I realize that.
Yeah.
Because it adds to that feeling of being buried. But you use an example in the book of something that happened to you as a child that can still be there and be cluttering up our emotions. You talk about when your teacher said you can't make
example. Yeah, I had an English teacher, and I'm sure, you know, I hope everybody can relate to this, and we all got past. But I had an English teacher, I remember, who looked me one day and said, you know, you can't make an A student out of a B student. And that kind of crushed me at the time because I was very motivated, wanted to do the best I could. And I actually didn't let that get me down. In fact, I decided I was going to do every extra credit exercise I could. She ended up having to give me an A. But I, how do we respond to that clutter? I mean, I had positive people in my life who were, encouraging to me. And so I think one of the things we can do is when we hear negative clutter like that is to, redirect and find our own strengths. And I talk about strengths in this book. And I think it's key to notice your strengths and put them into play. And that's one way of removing clutter, actually.
Right. So, well, since you brought up strengths, let's look at what you mean by strengths, because you talk about, just having breakfast. That's a strength of self-care. Walking the dog. I did both of these this morning. Walking the dog is the strength of kindness. Talk about some other strengths that we need to pay attention to.
Okay. What I like people to do is to think about, write down three strengths that you recognize in yourself. And that could be anything. Now, the thing about strength is so fascinating is a lot of people don't recognize their own strengths, right?
Right.
Or when people tell them their strengths, they say, oh, no, I don't really, they devalue it or diminish it in some way. And so I want you to think about things that people have maybe complimented you on. This is not to bolster you. This is not like an ego exercise and look how great I am, right? It's an exercise in accurately looking at the ways in which you are effective in the world. And so, or the way that you help and find resources, or the way you help others. So if you, you walked your dog this morning, that was a sign of compassion. That's a strength of compassion. You have the strength of self-care, which is taking care of yourself, getting enough sleep, getting enough nutrition. The thinking part of our brain needs protein every 2 to 3 hours, actually, to help it work effectively.
Mm-hmm.
I think even getting dressed in the morning is highly underrated, Vicki.
You do?
And sometimes we don't recognize that even the little accomplishments that we do for ourselves are important. Or let's say you go to the park, you go to the mall, and you come out to find your car. Finding your car is a strength of memory.
my friends will know me well because they all say, did you check where you left your car, Vicki?
So it's important to kind of recognize those strengths. And if you have a strength, you can recognize it. See how you can apply it one time each day for a week and then write down what that was like and keep track of it. So maybe your strength is hospitality and you like to maybe do a little something nice for someone. So maybe when you're at the office, you ask me, oh, can I get you a cup of coffee or would you like a glass of water? Or so you do something hospitable, find your strength and put one strength into practice every day for a week. And then the next week, try a different strength. And in this way, you're actually removing clutter. You're getting out of that busy world of thoughts and you're thinking about something you can do that can make a little change in the world, make something a little better for yourself and for others.
Yes, I like that. You talk about the emotional elevator. You have a chapter in here called Stop Riding the Emotional Elevator. And a lot of people do live on their emotions, depending on what's happening in that second, whether you'll catch them in a good mood or a bad mood. How does somebody stop letting external things affect them so much so that they can stop riding that elevator, as you call it?
Yeah. Riding the elevator, just so I can expand on that a little bit, is riding the emotional elevator is every time maybe something you think that is positive happens, somebody gives you a little compliment or somebody, you get that job you want or you buy that little thing you want or, something that, pushes the elevator up. Or maybe something negative happens. A friend doesn't return your text right away or, you don't get that job promotion or your review at your office doesn't go as planned. And the elevator goes down. And now, we go up and down. Think about how many times during the day your elevator, mood elevator, goes up and down. Or maybe it's from thoughts in our own head, that inner clutter that says, oh, I'm not good enough, or I don't look as good as that. You're comparing yourself to others, maybe. And so there's a whole inner elevator button pushing. So to get off that elevator, it can be exhausting going up and down, chasing those positive elevator things, trying to avoid the negative elevator, the going down. That can be very exhausting. And so I want people to, learn how we can become free of that.
Yes.
And and so you've got to first start to notice what is pushing the elevator and finding that there's a kind of, there is an awareness, a consciousness, that is just spacious awareness. It's an awareness that is not making, you know, all these decisions on, you know, good or bad, or, you know, am I good or bad? And it's just the awareness that is just witnessing things. And it's an open, spacious awareness. And it's an awareness that actually frees you from the elevator, because it's not, it can notice the elevator being pushed, for example, but it's not grabbing on to the up or down, right?
Right, right.
And so when you grab on to, let's say you're feeling an anxious thought about something you have to do tomorrow, if you grab on to that anxiety, that can pull you in a negative direction. I've actually asked people I've worked with as a psychotherapist, for example, it's like getting on a train. I said, if you get on that train of anxious thoughts, where does it take you? And I've had people say, oh, I go to Anxietyville or Anxiety Land, right?
Right.
But you can step off the train. And so that's what I'm talking about here, is just by observing, simply observing the emotion or naming it, and saying, oh, okay, this is anxiety, this is anger. And I've done this, for example, myself when I'm in the car driving, and where I've had people cut me off, and I will, you know, have, my mind will get very reactive in that moment. But the second that I observe it, say, wait, wow, I really got angry there. I could rate my anger, for example, and the second I rate it, or I start to observe it, I say, wow, where did this knot of anger around driving and impatience first get tied? And I start reflecting, I'm no longer in the grip of the anger, right?
Right.
I've just let it go. And so it's a practice, and I have a meditation in the Clearing Emotional Clutter book, especially for getting off the elevator and letting go ever so slightly of those things that kind of hook us and grab us, and, you know, negative emotions mm-hmm. that can pull us.
Right. Well, I want to talk about hope, but let's take a quick break first so I don't have to interrupt you, because you have a lot to say about the importance of hope and our responsibility to give hope to others. The book is called Clearing Emotional Clutter, Mindfulness Practices for Letting Go of What's Blocking Your Fulfillment and Transformation. My guest is Donald Altman, and we'll be back in just a second.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.
Coming up Monday, June 6th, on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Pulitzer finalist and award-winning journalist William Carlson shares tales from his new book, Jungle of Stone, a true story based on the journey of two men and their discovery of the lost Maya civilization. And award-winning author Hazel Gainer joins us from Ireland with her latest historical novel, Girl from the Savoy. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific time right here on Seattle's Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, and find more than 300 podcasts on topics from health and mental wellness to travel, adventure, business, and the environment at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Alternative Talk 1150 is on the interwebs. Dial us up at 1150kknw.com.
Through the shafts of your heart when you climb aboard, baby, there's no getting off. Please take my hand. I'm super light. I'm the elevator man.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. We were talking just a moment ago about jumping off the emotional elevator with Donald Altman. His new book is called Clearing Emotional Clutter. Donald is a psychotherapist, a former Buddhist monk, and he's written several books and conducts many, many, many workshops. And this book is you jump in here, please, if you would, Donald. It's built on information about mindful practices, but it also contains a lot of information from psychology practice, from neuroscience. Tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, I really like to include science and research, and the wonderful thing is getting a lot of new research coming out that's showing how mindfulness really does work and how it rewires the brain, actually changes our neural pathways. And so it's what I like to think of is called self-directed neuroplasticity. So the thoughts we have and where we focus our attention actually changes the physical structure of the brain, which changes how you think in the future. That's really cool.
Right.
And that was kind of one of the core ideas. I wanted to include that in the book.
Yeah. So we were talking before we went to break about jumping off the emotional elevator, and you shared ways that we can start working on that. You write in the book about how difficult time in your life was going through a divorce, and I think anybody who's been through divorce can relate to that. And you talked about the power of just giving up your worries to the trees and to the stars. Share a thought on that, if you would, please.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. That was a very dark period of my life, and anybody who's gone through a divorce or had a loss of that kind knows that. And right in the midst of that, where I just briefly had, I'd separated from my wife at that time, and we were trying to figure out what was going to happen. And I stepped out in my backyard, and I was feeling very hopeless. Like, I couldn't solve this whole, it was like a conundrum. It was like a puzzle. I couldn't fit the pieces together, and I was frustrated and despairing. And I went out in the backyard. It was in the middle of winter, and it was freezing, but I just sat, and I looked up. It was a clear night, and I just cast my gaze up at the stars. And this is a practice I use with a lot of people. I call it sky gazing, and just casting your worries out, just giving it all up, letting it go to something bigger. And you can call that whatever you want. The divine nature, whatever you want to call that, but I let it go, and just gazing up at the stars and the silhouette of the trees was, it's like time stopped. And what happened was that I kind of let go of that egocentric part of myself, the mind that was really enmeshed in all these troubles, right? And that part just got smaller. And here was this open spaciousness that I really think is key to kind of transcending, just feeling a sense of freedom. And I put it into words, but I entered that space where suddenly I knew it was going to be okay. And what I've called it is, it's all the blessing. It's all the blessing, even the divorce and the struggles. And when I went back into suddenly I came back to myself. I was shivering, freezing there. But I went in the house, built a fire, warmed up. But I knew deep down that it was going to be okay.
Right.
And I was only able to really access that through getting in nature and just casting my gaze out. If you're aware there's some trees, you can cast your gaze up and then look at a tree and look at the branches and slowly bring your gaze down, just looking and getting very present with this tree. Trees are the largest living organisms on the planet, and so we can look at them and the beauty, and just bring your gaze down all the way down into the roots, imagining the root structure going down, or placing your hands on the tree. And I've had people have amazing experiences of letting go and finding insight, a new sense of peace in that moment. So I'm very grateful for that. And even when I returned to when there were problems and I couldn't figure them out, I reminded myself of that experience I had. So we don't have to go chasing the experience, but I think that once we have it, it can give us a sense of peace, and it's what I call not a solution, but a soul-lution.
I love that. Yes, I love that.
Yeah, and that's one wonderful way to, again, clear the clutter.
Right. Let's talk about hope. You say it takes many forms, and whether we like it or not, it reflects that we're all floating in the same leaky boat. And when we give hope to another, we ease suffering. So talk to us a little bit about why you say hope is so important and why we have a responsibility to give hope.
We live in a world with many, many problems, and I think it's important to find hope to give us, connect us with our deeper purpose. And so what I hope is that people can find a deeper purpose. We all have it, and it could be just what you're doing. It could be the work that you do and how you share that with another. And it can change your life, connecting with your sense of purpose. So I think it's vital for everyone to think about, what is my purpose? What gift do I have? And it doesn't. And I think one of the mistakes people make is to think about it in big terms, like, oh, my, you know, I can't find my purpose. I can't do anything really that's going to change the world. But if we change one little thing, one life, and that life changes many other lives, and I mean, it can be a ripple effect. And also to think that it's that little ordinary thing you do. Remember Mother Teresa? I love that poem she wrote. And she said, my daughters, it's the small things in life. Have faith in the little things. That's where your strength lies.
Yes.
So to even do one little thing, make a difference for one person, even if it's, I knew a guy who, he was a barber. He cut people's hair. And there was a clinic that helped out his daughter, who had a hearing problem, and he couldn't afford to pay them. And he said, I really want to give something back to you. And they said to him, so this is a true story, and they said to him, well, what you can do is, you know, why don't you give some haircuts to people who can't afford it, who are, you know, trying to find jobs. And he had given thousands of haircuts to people, and even met those people, who some of the people he gave haircuts to, and you wouldn't believe how it, just to know that somebody gave them this haircut and cared enough so that they could go out and try to improve their lives by interviewing, and they looked good, they looked better. It was amazing. So here he just put into action what he was already doing, what he knew how to do. And
it seems such a small thing, and yet it's such a big thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A big thing, actually.
So one other thing I really want to make sure we touch on today, because I've not seen anybody else really talk about this. You have a chapter called Put the Brakes on Work and Speed. And you say that we can slow the pace with mindful transitions. So talk to us about what you mean by mindful transitions and why they're so important.
Yeah, and this really is important. It's important to know that when you're transitioning, and I want your listeners to all think about this, that when you're moving from one place to another, when you leave your home base, and maybe you're going to your office, or you get on the freeway, or you're going to an appointment, you don't know what's going to happen next when you're in transition. And so that's when anxiety and uncertainty happens to increase. So we can transition in a more aware way. And this means a couple of things. For one thing, transitioning means when you're leaving the people that you're with, have some closure with them. Have a sense of connection. Say some little nice thing that, you know, oh, have a nice day, or give them a hug or something, and I'll talk to you, you know, we'll text later or whatever. So if there's a feeling of safety and closure. And when you're entering a new place, connect with somebody. When you come into a new place, it's all about, safety and inclusion. You want to feel like you're part of it, so find someone you can connect with. These are little tiny transitional rituals. Also, I think it's important when you're transitioning to have what I call fidelity to the moment. And fidelity to the moment means that when you're driving somewhere, drive just to drive, right? Not to, I'm going to get to this other place, and you're driving. You don't even know you're driving. When you get there, you can't even remember it, right?
Right, right.
But drive just to drive. Be present. Feel your hands in the steering wheel. Feel your body in the chair. Hear the rumble of the tires beneath you, okay? And or when you're walking, and, you know, we've all been there. I remember walking my mailbox and just thinking about all the things I had to do that day, and I wasn't present. And then I decided, well, you know what? I remember times when I've just stopped and said, wait, I want to walk just to walk. And all of a sudden, a whole new world opens up. And because all those things I was thinking of, I couldn't alter or change them anyway. But
right.
Here, suddenly, I could hear the birds. I could see the you know, all the little things that were around me. And it was really a moment, a beautiful moment that I could savor the ordinary things. So it's also transitioning is to notice the ordinary things in your day. Also, simplify. So if you have a lot of transitions to make, see if you can cut them down in size. So maybe I have 6 errands to do. So maybe I take 3 of those errands that are all nearby, you know, in close proximity to one another. I do those on one day and do the other 3 on another day. So you can also reduce the number of transitions you have in a day, and that's another way to reduce clutter.
Yes, all powerful stuff. And I especially love, you know, the when you're walking, just walk. That's what I did this morning. I was just listening to the birds twittering, and then a blue heron stepped right out in front of me in the pathway, and we just kind of stared at one another for a moment before he took off. But
yeah.
It set my day up well.
That's beautiful.
So I know your website is mindfulpractices.com. The book is Clearing Emotional Clutter, Mindfulness Practices for Letting Go of What's Blocking Your Fulfillment and Transformation. There's so much more I'd like to talk with you about, but we're right out of time. So a final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, no matter how much clutter you've experienced, even family clutter, you can transform that. And I really believe this is a transformative book that can help people. So I'm very grateful for being on the show, and I hope all your listeners know that mindfulness can help them deal even with the difficult challenges.
Yes. And again, their website is mindfulpractices.com, and Donald Altman's book, Clearing Emotional Clutter. Donald, thanks so much for being with us today. I appreciate your time.
Oh, well, thank you, Vicki. Bless you and bless your listeners.
And do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Lately, I have realized that I need to simplify. Thoughts pass like ships in the sky. Do or do not, there's no try. Life
begins. Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Northwest School of Animal Massage on Vashon Island, we cover the world of animals. This week, May 29th, by special request, it's Vet Sunday with our favorite animal world vet, Dr. Bill Burlingame. He's an expert on the best immune system support for both animals and humans. He uses a balanced approach and is a wealth of information that you can tap for free. Plan to give us a call. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Coming up Monday, June 6th, on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Pulitzer finalist and award-winning journalist William Carlson shares tales from his new book, Jungle of Stone, a true story based on the journey of two men and their discovery of the lost Maya civilization. And award-winning author Hazel Gaynor joins us from Ireland with her latest historical novel, Girl from the Savoy. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific time right here on Seattle's Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m., and find more than 300 podcasts on topics from health and mental wellness to travel, adventure, business, and the environment at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
The new mainstream of talk radio. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
No time to be meek and mild. Live simply like a child.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Christine Hassler. She's the author of 20-something, 20-everything, the 20-something manifesto, and most recently, Expectation Hangover, which is now available in paperback. She left her successful job as a Hollywood agent to pursue a life she could be passionate about, and for more than a decade has been sharing a passion to ease suffering as an integrative life coach and speaker. And I'm very pleased to welcome Christine Hassler to the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
And the book, again, will say it's Expectation Hangover. Free yourself from your past, change your present, and get what you really want. So let's give an example of what you mean by expectation hangover. Let's share what happened to you when you are a Hollywood agent and you have this fabulous life. Everybody from the outside looking in thinks you've got it made and you've got a mighty expectation hangover.
Yes. Well, maybe I'll first define what an expectation hangover is. People may not know what it means because I made it up. So it's when one of three things occurs, either a desired plan or outcome or a goal or result doesn't happen, or you achieve something, things do go according to plan, however you don't feel like you thought you would. You don't have the feelings of fulfillment you thought you'd have from the job, which was kind of my expectation hangover, which I'll get to. Or life just throws you a very unexpected curveball, and you're left feeling a sense of regret, lack of motivation, you're spinning in confusion, kind of wondering what to do, and just this sense of stuckness, failure, and most commonly, the word used to describe an expectation hangover is disappointment. So for me, I was an extreme overachiever to compensate for massive insecurity that I had growing up. And if you have massive insecurity and something to prove, Hollywood is a great place to come to try to prove yourself.
Right.
So I moved to Hollywood and worked my way up and was the youngest ever female agent and was making a lot of money and doing really fun things like the Oscars and Golden Globes and all of those types of things. And I lived in when then, you know, like when I get promoted, then I'll be happier. When I make a certain amount of money, then I'll feel better about myself. Or when this person is my boyfriend, then I'll feel confident. And I would check things off my list, but the happiness, the fulfillment, everything that I thought would come with it wasn't necessarily happening. And I finally reached a point where I was like, wait a second, nothing outside of me, nothing on this checklist. I've done everything that I thought I could do to make me happy, and I'm still not happy. So what's the deal? And that was my first major, major expectation hangover. Of course, I had many growing up and heartbreaks and things like that, but probably the most severe and the one that made me question things most was working so hard at something, reaching a certain result that I really believed was something I wanted, and then then have it not turn out like I planned. It was definitely a wake-up call.
Yeah, and so many of us find ourselves in that situation, you know, at least once in life, if some more, you know, many more times than once.
Oh, yeah.
And yet we still stay stuck in that. It becomes a comfort zone for us, even though it's painful.
Right.
And we get stuck in that comfort zone. Why do we get stuck there when it is painful for us?
Well, it's interesting to me how human beings, we will choose painful yet familiar over uncomfortable and uncertain. So it's almost like I know my pain, I know my misery, I know what it's like. I don't necessarily like it, but I have some kind of control and certainty about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone that is depressed every day, even though they don't like being depressed every day, it's predictable. And there's no uncertainty. Now, for them to go out and shift it, they may need to leave a relationship, leave a job, move, do something, go to counseling or get a coach, do something completely out of their comfort zone. But there's so much uncertainty and unknown about that that they don't.
Yes.
And as humans, one of the things we're addicted to more than anything is control and certainty. We don't like not knowing. We like knowing things. But that's almost our biggest liability, is that we get so addicted to certainty and so comfortable in our comfort zone because it's familiar, not because it's comfortable, that we will tolerate pain. As a coach and spiritual counselor, I'm amazed at people's level of tolerance for pain.
Yeah, for suffering.
That's the word I was looking for, suffering. It's like, but their fear of the unknown is greater than that. So until we kind of jump into the unknown and say, you know what, my fear of staying in this kind of personal hell has to be greater than my fear of uncertainty.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of people reach out during that time for quick fixes. And you talk about this at several points throughout the book, and you talk about quick fixes that do work. But let's look at quick fixes that don't work, first of all. You say replacing an expectation hangover with a new job, with a new car, with a new boyfriend, a new girlfriend, whatever, it doesn't work. It's got to come from the inside.
That's right. That's right. You know, I think I wrote in the book, one of the breakup advice that I hear people give each other and that I've gotten is the best way to get over someone is to get under someone else. And I'm like, oh my gosh, no, that is terrible. It's just perpetuating the same thing. But we want to do that. You know, we are so externally referenced, and we have to start moving from inside out. And, you know, with every expectation hangover, why I'm so passionate about helping people through these, you know, and why I wrote a book basically about leveraging disappointment, is because I know from my own experience and working in this field for 12 years now that within every expectation hangover is this amazing opportunity for transformation and healing. And if you try to just get through it and almost get over it by distracting yourself, numbing yourself, finding another relationship, another job, overworking, overeating, overdrinking, over-Facebooking, whatever it may be, you're going to miss out on the window for a very profound healing experience and something that can be a complete transformational pivot in your life. But you have to be willing to sit in the discomfort for a bit and ask, what am I learning, rather than why is this happening to me and how can I stop feeling bad?
Yes. And you say that one of the primary reasons it doesn't work is because what motivated and attracted that new thing in your life, you were coming from that place of disappointment and feelings of lack.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's sort of like, maybe people listening, maybe you can relate to this. You know, you wake up in the morning, you stub your toe on the bed, then you spill coffee, then like you get stuck in traffic, then someone cuts you off, then you realize like somebody important didn't get your email. It's just like when you start your day kind of in that negative space, you keep attracting sort of more of those experiences until you consciously start to shift it. And that's how it works with what we bring into our life. Let's take the example of being heartbroken. If I just have been heartbroken and my self-worth is low and I'm feeling incomplete and I'm feeling like, oh, I'm getting older and I've got to find somebody, and I could go out and totally manifest a relationship. However, the person I'm attracted to is in vibrational alignment with, I'm not enough, I lack something, I just need someone to complete me. So the chances of really attracting a healthy relationship that's going to get you where you want to go and that is from your most pure, authentic, whole, complete place is pretty low. You're better off healing the expectation hangover, no matter what it is, relationship, job, even your health, before going and trying to create something new.
Right. Now, a lot of people will say, I'm just going to put it out into the universe and it will come back to me. You say there's a problem with the law of attraction, and I agree. What is that problem?
The problem is we don't change our belief system. So I know people that have vision boards and, you know, ideal scenes, and they can, you know, describe everything they want, but they haven't updated their belief system. So a lot of people do this with money. They have these vision boards of these mansions and cars and money, and they still can't pay their bills. And a big reason is that they haven't looked at the belief systems of not being enough, not being worthy, believing things like, in order to have money, I have to work hard, or even belief systems they may not be consciously aware of. Like, I've worked with a lot of clients who we've uncovered they have a belief that money's evil, or people with money are mean, or, you know, divas, or whatever it may be. And so in order for the law of attraction to work in its most co-creative aligned state, we have to really look at our beliefs and how we feel. Because I can have as many vision boards about money on my wall as I want, but if I don't feel worthy, and I don't feel prosperous, and I don't feel like having money is something that brings grace and ease and feels safe in my life, then I'm not going to attract it.
Right, right, right. And I'm not going to be working toward it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to end up sabotaging myself. This is what I see. This is what we see with lottery winners.
Yes.
You know, they win this money, but because their energetic belief systems and vibration doesn't match the amount, right? It's like they can't hold the container, so they just spend it. Because on a lot of level, people who win lotteries don't really think they're worthy. They think it's a fluke. They can't believe it's happened. They haven't cleaned up their own belief systems about money. They don't really understand prosperity. And they just spend it.
Yeah, yeah. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the difference between surrender and resignation. And
ooh, yes.
I thought you'd like that one. My guest is Christine Hassler. Her book is Expectation Hangover, Free Yourself from Your Past, Change Your Present, and Get What You Really Want. And we will be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Find out about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.
Get your smile on with Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, my guest is Christine Hassler. She is a former Hollywood agent, has been an integrative life coach, speaker, traveling around the country for the last decade or so. And she's written a new book, Expectation Hangover, Free Yourself from Your Past, Change Your Present, and Get What You Really Want. And this book's been out in hardback. It's just out in paperback, right, Christine?
Yes.
That's what I thought. Okay, so I wanted to talk in this segment about surrender, and there's a couple of angles I want to look at here. I wanted to look at, you talk about how, you know, we often fight what's really happening, reality. We put on a strong exterior and it leaves us utterly exhausted. And you say surrendering through acceptance is one of the most powerful things we can do. So talk to us a little bit about surrender. And I want to look at, you know, what is surrender versus resignation? What's the difference there?
Right. Well, sometimes they can feel the same. I mean, surrender is one of those things that, like, is, like, such a spiritually sexy word. Like, oh, I'm surrendering. But what I see with people, like, sometimes what they're really saying is, I'm giving up. I don't want to do what it takes to get what I want. I don't think I deserve it. I kind of just want to be lazy. I've given up hope. So resignation has a hopeless, helpless doubt quality to it. Surrender doesn't mean giving up. It means letting go of attachment. It means letting go of attachment to form, to timing, to those types of things. So it's more about when we surrender, it's like, all right, like I'm letting go of the way this has to happen, of when it's up to when it has to happen. I'm letting go of pushing and making this and forcing it. And instead, I'm going to allow. I'm going to allow this to come in the form and the timing. I'm going to keep putting one step in front of the other, but I'm also going to practice observant surrender and really listen to guidance. So, for example, like, you know, with certain people that I've coached, they may be trying to start a business and they keep putting things out there and trying new things and trying to build their business and nothing's happening. They're getting no feedback. Nothing's happening whatsoever. And that sort of feedback from the universe of maybe this isn't the most aligned path. And so what happens when we kind of get to that place is, all right, I surrender that this might not be the exact place, the exact direction for me. I'm not going to resign. I'm not going to give up completely on building a business, but I may need to take a different direction. So surrender has the energy of letting go. Resignation has the energy of giving up.
Big difference there. Big difference.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, you were talking about the example of the business, and I see a couple of people that I work with periodically who go through that cycle of, you know, give it all, they're working all hours, and then they just collapse for a few days and can't get off their couch. And and then they start that whole busy cycle again, but it's just taking them around in a big circle and a big loop.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's very discouraging, you know. And I think the other thing with surrender is there's a certain faith it requires. You know, people tend to resign because they've lost faith that, and they think that they're alone in the universe and they have to do everything. And what I've realized is the more I get out of my own way and really listen to my intuitive guidance and pay attention to the feedback the universe is giving me, I don't have to push and fight so hard. But at the same time, I can't be lazy and give up, because when we give up, we're sort of saying to the universe, I don't believe in myself and I don't believe in you anymore.
Right, right. So I mentioned in the break when I was reading your book, I was shocked by how many different ways I distract myself. And I think that's probably a fairly common thing, that we distract ourselves without even realizing we're distracting ourselves. And, you know, as I said, I got caught up in somebody else's, well, I didn't get caught up in the drama, but I somebody needed a shoulder to cry on the weekend, and it's happened several times, and it can sometimes leave me feeling drained. And and then I don't want to do anything else afterwards.
Right.
But you also want to be a good friend. So how do we balance that kind of thing? And you do share compensatory strategies in here on page 117 for us to, you know, deal with distractions.
Right. Yeah, so a lot of time, I mentioned when I was telling a little bit of my story that I was an overachiever, and that was my compensatory strategy. And compensatory strategies are the things that we lean into to get over where we feel less than. So if I felt, you know, I was teased a lot, I was bullied a lot, I didn't have a lot of friends, I felt less than, I felt unlikable. So I thought, well, if I'm not going to be liked, then I'm going to be a high achiever. And that was my compensatory strategy. That's how I distracted myself from the pain of feeling not a sense of belonging and making up for where I felt less than.
Yeah.
So these compensatory strategies are useful and they're effective, and they get things like helping people makes us feel loved. It makes us feel like we have a purpose. It makes us feel needed. And those are all really good feelings. You know, we like to feel those way, that way. But like you said, it can also be really draining and really depleting because it can be distracting us from really taking care of ourselves and making self-honoring choices for ourselves. So, you know, when I like using the specific example of helping people, I really look from the place of, you know, am I going into over-responsibility? Am I working harder at their life than they are?
Mm. Yeah, that's such a good point. That is a really good point.
Yeah, because then we kind of get into savior complex. Mm-hmm. And it's not our job to save anyone. It's not our job to, you know, give advice or swoop in. You know, with my friends and family, even though this is what I do for a living and I have a lot of training and degrees and I'm also very intuitive and you know, that this is my profession, unless someone in my personal life specifically asks me for help or coaching or, I don't do it.
Right.
Because I want to respect the dignity of everyone's process. And so I think there's a difference between being present for the people in our life, being loving, and then going into savior rescue mode, because as soon as we do that, we end up feeling depleted.
Right, right. Good point. There's a chapter in here. You take a holistic approach to for treating the expectation hangover, and you do it on a couple of different levels. A great quote in here by Henry David Thoreau: "If we will be quiet and ready enough, we shall find compensation in every disappointment." We only have a couple of minutes here, Christine, but could you just share how you take a holistic approach to treating expectation hangovers?
Oh, sure. Great question. I forgot about that quote. Thank you for bringing it into this conversation. The things that I noticed about the personal growth industry, which I respect and I'm a part of, is there's a lot of quick fix promises. And I've noticed so many people in personal development have expectation hangovers because they read one book or they do one thing or they do their yoga or their mantra and they don't feel better.
Right.
And then they're like, I'm failing at personal growth. And then they're disappointed. They're even more, they're disappointed about their process in addition to whatever they were disappointed about. So I wanted to provide a holistic approach in this book to give people a really, really thorough treatment plan. And so the holistic approach is you go in and you learn how to treat disappointment first emotionally, because that's the area we most like to suppress and repress, and we don't have a lot of tools for how to deal with our feelings, then mentally, then behaviorally, then spiritually, because we have emotions, we have thoughts, we have actions, and we have a spiritual connection. And if we don't treat disappointment on all of those levels, then we never really get to the core of the issue, and then we can never really free ourselves from our past, change our present, and get what we really want.
Yeah, I love it. Well, on the front of the book, Arianna Huffington quotes, Christine Hassler reminds us that we all have within us the ability to meet life's challenges and move from struggle to grace. The book is called Expectation Hangover: Free Yourself from Your Past, Change Your Present, and Get What You Really Want. A final quick thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Christine.
The most important relationship you will ever have is your relationship with yourself. So consider the question, if you talk to your friends like you often talk to yourself, would you have any? And really look at
no.
Oh yeah, and that's the thing. Like what I get from you, Vic, is you're such a wonderful friend to others. And I say this to you, and I say this to a lot of people listening. Be that friend to yourself. Being hard on ourselves is not a good form of motivation. Inspire yourself instead by being kind to yourself, acknowledging yourself, being compassionate with yourself.
There we go. Awesome. Great words to leave this segment on. Christine Hassler, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
And you can find out more about Christine and the work she's doing at her website, which is her name, ChristineHassler.com. And Hassler is HASSLER. And the book, again, Expectation Hangover, and website, ChristineHassler.com. Well, I want to thank each of you for joining us today. We'll be back next week with an all-live new show. And if you have questions or comments or feedback on today's show, if you have any questions about guest book or how to reach them, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. You can also email me at info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net. And you can find us on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and I'm on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. And that's it for this week. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.